Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
John Teter. So who was John Teter? It's an interesting story, and I guess we need to begin with the basics. So I was first told about John Teter by yourself, Peter, a few years back now, because you'd heard a radio show, hadn't you, in the UK, late night phone-in radio show.
That was on Talk Sport.
Talk Sport, yeah. And there was a guest who was talking about a guy called John Teter, and it was a fascinating topic, and it was sort of a bit out of the ordinary at the time, and it was an interesting subject for the show. The gist of it is, though, is that in the early part of last decade, 2000s, 2001, somebody went on various internet forums and IRC chat rooms, internet relay chat, using the handle TimeTravel_0, and I think that was the first name that he used, and then eventually on various forums he called himself John Teter. And he was just essentially a guy that went on forums and just said, "I'm a time traveller." And he didn't make any great deal of effort to convince people that that was the truth. He just did it. He just made out he was a time traveller. And he answered questions and he said a load of interesting facts that to this day people are dissecting, and no one really knows if it was real or not. And unlike most of these sort of internet pseudonyms, that sort of internet classic characters that come and go, this guy sort of stood the test of time. And I think it's because a lot of what he was saying actually arguably has some sort of grounding to it in terms of science and in terms of time travel theories and all this business. And this was the early days of the internet for a start, and I think we need to establish that the internet 10 years ago was very different to the internet of today. You didn't have a YouTube, you didn't have social media really. You barely had social media, you kind of did, but not like Facebook, etc. And people that went on the internet in those days were a little bit more geeky, and they were probably a little bit more inclined to sort of want to discuss these subjects just because of the nature of the people that were on the internet in those days. And the internet certainly gained its popularity, I think, around 2004, 2005. That's when it really kind of took off. But Teter was talking at length about what would happen in the next 10 years, 10, 20 years, and all these theories. And none of them actually really have happened yet, because he was talking about social unrest in the States that would eventually lead to a civil war, and he was talking about nuclear fallouts and all this stuff. But the theory that Teter had, and this is the thing that really sort of captivates people, is that it's all reality is based on the parallel worlds theory, really, which is this idea that the universe consists of an infinite number of multiple dimensions. So every possibility exists. There's an infinite number of world lines out there, and that's what Teter called them. And what he was arguing is that he came from a different world line. So he time travelled from, I think, the year 2038, and he ended up in the 80s, the 70s, as part of his mission. And this is everything, this is what Teter was talking about in his posts. He had an objective, which was to obtain an IBM 5100 machine, which is one of the first commercially available personal computers. And the reason he needed it was to debug some code in the year 2038. So that's quite an interesting sort of objective, and it's very unlike the sort of things you see in sci-fi films and comic books, etc. And what he was saying was that basically he stopped off in the year 2000 on the way back for unknown reasons, and there's a lot of speculation about why he could have possibly done that or why he would do it, but apparently he did it. Spent 3 months posting on internet forums and then disappeared. And he argues that he obviously doesn't know, but the reason that now we haven't seen the things that he predicted is probably because we aren't operating in the same world line as he was talking about at the time, which is, it's quite an interesting thing to try and get your head around. Peter, do you think perhaps that this is just another example of someone online just trying to make a big deal out of some sort of great theory they've got and trying to sort of build a name for themselves kind of thing. We've seen that a few times over the years.
I think this is more convincing because I think there's more corroboration from the original audio I heard. I can't remember who the speaker was on TalkSport. I think it was on the Howard Hughes Unexplained show that ran from, I think, late 2004 to early 2006. I'm pretty sure it was on that, or it may have been on the James Wells show. I can't remember. I do have a recording at home of it, but I have it on a mini disc. I need to sort of transfer it onto a more modern format, perhaps, and have a listen to it and archive it. But it was a very interesting, very gripping story at the time. And I know we did then Google it and find a website with a photograph of a car on it, which had some extra circuitry wired into it that seemed to be quite convincing as some sort of retro futuristic technology of some sort.
Yeah.
And there seemed to be some witnesses who'd seen John Titor, so it wasn't just postings on a forum. You could invent a scenario like that and make it convincing with a certain amount of care. An old joke I thought up years ago, I thought it was quite funny, is that my friend held a fancy dress party. The theme was time travel. I turned up a week early and said it was crap. And that's kind of like a party pooper idea. Yeah. But you could sort of do that and kind of, you could invent things like that just with words and say something's going to happen and it doesn't happen and you say you've changed it. And that happens a lot in the conspiracy movement. I mean, people say, oh, this is going to happen, and then it doesn't happen, and did predicting it. Like with our old theme, the Olympics, you know, we all said they're going to blow it up. They didn't blow it up. Did they listen to some podcasts and go, well, we better not do that. We've been found out. Probably not, but you can always argue these things. And if you wanted to make a name for yourself as someone with prescience, you could do that, and you could well pose as a time traveller and say that's how you got the information. You could equally pose as a psychic and do a similar thing. So in this case, someone could have been posing as a time traveller. But I think there was corroboration with this story. There seemed to be a few more threads to it that made it interesting. It didn't seem to be he was gaining anything from doing it. It seemed to be quite a difficult thing to do. It wasn't sensational to the point where any great sort of event happened. It was just done and then he disappeared, and it's not like he's got rich out of it or written a book or something. So it's an interesting story and one I think is still credible. There's a lot of things out there that are incredible, but I think this is worth a look, definitely.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is certainly important when you think of John Titor stuff is that's the thing, a lot of this stuff is difficult because all the original forum posts, etc., they were archived by various fans of John Titor and kept offline for a period of time. And now years ago, they resurfaced online, and then they're now hosted by various websites. So this stuff is available, but not all of it is available, unfortunately. I've tried to find a full archive of all of his posts, and nothing really exists. There was a website called anomalies.net, which used to host all of his original forum posts, but that went down and it's still not back up. I have heard that it should be back up in the next few months, so that'll be interesting to see if it comes back up. But I've heard that he was challenged by somebody on a forum to kind of prove a lot of this stuff, or to at least show some evidence. So he revealed all these photographs of his time travel equipment. I think the most important and certainly the most interesting thing that he actually had to offer was imagery of what looked like some sort of scans document, some sort of photocopied manual that showed the inner workings of his time machine. And this would not have been an easy thing to fake. It's an extremely elaborate thing to fake, and you would need to know a lot about science and graphic design and military spec blueprints and how it's done in the real world to actually fake something like that. It's not the sort of thing you could just knock up in Microsoft Word and say, stamp a military, you know, sign of insignia on it and say, yeah, this is my time travel device. This was, it looked a little bit more conventional and certainly a little bit more realistic than that. Mm. And to this day, I think somebody challenged the community online, the internet community, to basically show us what that was actually really an instruction kit for, because Fury was basically, it was like some old radiation device from the Cold War, and it was basically just, you know, it looked like some sort of amazing odd scientific piece of equipment, but it was actually something really mundane. But to this day, nobody's been able to come forward and prove that it is a manual that exists for a particular item that isn't a time machine. It doesn't seem to exist, basically. It's just this artifact that has no reference point, no genesis that anyone can really discover. And I find that fascinating. And people have done quite a lot of research on the document, and there's about 5 or 6 pages of it that John Titor revealed online. And there's a key, there's some very interesting graphical imagery of the inner workings of the device. There's all this technical jargon about it, and it just seems authentic. And put it this way, if it's fake, then this is probably the most elaborate online hoax story that there's ever been. And I don't think anything in the last decade has topped this one. This is, this is just something that really is going to be an infamous sort of case. But there is an interesting theory that's surfaced in the last few years, which is that there's now a kind of world authority on John Titor, and he's the guy that was interested in the story from day one, and he launched a website called johntitor.com. And it's basically just a website talking about the John Titor story. So obviously, if you listen to this episode of our podcast and want to know more, that's probably the first port of call that we'd recommend, is johntitor.com, just to read up on this. But the theory is that the website admin, the guy that launched that site, basically is John Titor. So the whole thing was just done so they could gain some notoriety online. But I don't really buy that. And he was on the George Norrie Coast to Coast show last year, 2011, and he adamantly argued that that wasn't the case, and he made it very clear that he wasn't John Titor. But people out there are still going to argue that he's just lying, and it's all just a way of gaining attention.
Well, if he was going to fake it, wouldn't he want to pretend he'd gone back to 2000, wherever he came from, ahead of now? Why would he stop off now to make a website? If he'd come from the year 2000, he would have had to stopped off to make a website, wouldn't he?
Well, I guess he's trying to end the story. Because John Titor then went back. So at the end of the John Titor story, he said on a forum, "I'm going back to 2038 now." And that was his last ever forum post.
And when was that posted?
That would have been in 2000 or 2001.
So when was the website made?
The website, I think, was launched in about 2003.
So why would he stop off in 2003 and make a website and then carry on to 2038?
Well, he wouldn't, because the fictional character of John Titor wouldn't do that. But this guy who claims he's just a guy that was on the forum has gone and done that now.
But is he trying to debunk his own story?
He's just trying to archive it and keep it in the public domain as a website. But it's almost, the argument is this guy's creating his own myth, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so, but he's also undermining it, because if he was creating his own myth, he should have gone ahead in time by now. So yeah, he should have pretended to have stopped off and done the website and then continued on, or given himself, pretended John Titor was not him but had given him the information and then gone ahead, and he was acting as an agent in 2004. If you think of time travel, John Titor would have had to pass through that era and gone past it. So if he was here now, he couldn't be here now doing a website, you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean, but I think the point is that this isn't John Titor's website. It's not a website that John Titor created. It's a website that some guy called, I can't remember the guy's name, but they've just created it because they're a fan of the story.
Yeah, but you're saying he's trying to identify with being him?
No, he's not.
Oh, I see. Okay.
No, that's the point. He's not. He's saying, because he's just saying he's a guy that's interested in the story.
Right.
And as a result, he's gone online and spent months just drawing all this information together, and then he's created a website and he's just chronicling the whole thing.
Yeah.
But the argument is that he is actually John Titor, so he's basically created an online identity, stirs up all this interest, and then he's now basically pretending to be the researcher that's going to try and, you know, uncover the truth, but he is basically John Tita. It's an interesting story. It's sort of like,
well, I wouldn't say, if you say he is John Tita, he's just someone who invented the idea of John Tita. In that,
yeah, that,
to call him John Tita is like calling him the character.
Yeah,
I think for the purposes of this talk, John Tita is the character who actually did it.
Yeah,
if someone's posing as him or has invented him,
yeah,
they can't be called John Tita. They're just an imposter who's invented a fictional character.
Yeah, precisely. So it'd be a nice sort of Sherlock Holmes style ending to the story if that turned out to be the case, but. I mean, personally, I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. But it's an interesting new slant on the John Tita story, and that's only really come to light in the last few years as a sort of theory, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he was the person who gave the original audio interview I heard, because I don't know who that was. But they were very plausible, and again, they weren't just hiding behind a website. They were going on live radio.
Yeah.
So I find that a bit more credible. I think just website-based stuff, you know, can be very passive and... it doesn't engage, and it's not really challenged. So he might be what he says he is, an archivist, but yes, he could have invented it, of course. But then how do you make this manual that you say is very convincing?
Yeah, and the photographs.
He could have done. I mean, don't think there aren't good technical artists out there who couldn't do it, but the better done it is, the harder it is to do, of course.
Yeah, and... with every, you know, it's very difficult to summarise the John Tita story, because from the outset you just think to yourself, well, it's surely if he's coming back to our timeline and dropping into 2000s, people, you know, the first thing I guess you'd ask is there a chance he would meet himself? All these paradoxes, time travel paradoxes. And I think one of the interesting things about this whole John Tita business is whoever the forum, you know, identity John Tita was, they made it clear in their posts that the reality of the nature of the universe is that there really aren't time travel paradoxes. If you go back in time, all you're doing is going back into a timeline, a world line. So you can cause absolute carnage in that world line. You could kill yourself and you could kill your parents before they had you, but nothing would actually change, because then when you time travel back to the future, you're in a different world line. So you're basically hopping between dimensions. It's not just time travel. And Tita argued that was the only way you could do it. You couldn't time travel in this clean line, you know, from your world line back 10 years. You're always, and he called it divergence. And one of the things he said, which I think is very interesting, was his time travel machine had a limit of 60 years. And that wasn't because of some scientific, you know, rule they couldn't breach or anything like that. It was simply because if they went back any further than 60 years, they'd end up going beyond the divergence threshold, which they think was acceptable. So in other words, their world line, the one that they ended up in, would diverge so away from what they are used to in their world line that it would become sort of almost too different, too alien. So, for example, and it's difficult to sort of comprehend what that could possibly mean, but, you know, you could have a world line, for example, where the English language didn't exist. You know, you could have a world line where black was white and white was black, for example, and just odd things like that. And what Tita sort of made it clear that was the sort of limitation that they, as soldiers in the year 2038, had to deal with. And he predicted a war in his world line, in our world line, which did occur in his world line, a war which should have kicked off by now. So it obviously hasn't happened in our world line, because here we are in 2013. But he predicted that by the end of 2015, I think, a world war would have ended, and there would then be a sort of new society where everything would kind of go back a little bit, 30 or 40 odd years, and technology would sort of be less at the forefront of people's existence, and there'd be more of a community spirit. And he was part of a sort of military outfit that needed to go back in time to obtain objects and to obtain artifacts. And that Tita was saying that was the only reason they would go back in time, was to obtain artifacts, and that was it. Which I just think is an interesting little slant on time travel, because in time travel films, etc., there's always some reason to go back in time, but it's never something as basic as we need to obtain an IBM machine or you know, a book or something, you know.
How much energy did it take for the machine to go back in time? Was that a difficult thing to achieve?
I don't think he really went into detail when it comes to that. I mean, he did talk a little bit about the science of the time travel machine that he used, and it was to do with a certain type of black hole, which does exist in quantum physics. It's called a Kerr, K-E-R-R, a Kerr black hole. And his theory was that you basically create two mini black holes, and the time machine then creates a sort of energy vortex around these black holes, which spins and sucks the gravity in, and then you go in and spin around a bit, and eventually the machine pulls you back a certain amount of time, but you travel at a physical sort of so it takes an hour to go back 10 years, which is a sort of weird theory that I don't think anyone else has really kind of raised before. But it's this idea that you have to be in this by this machine moving at a physical speed, and his time travel was in a car. So he was saying that when he was driving, he would actually be driving in time as well as, you know, driving in terms of physical distance, which that's the only part of his whole story that I can't quite get my head around, is this idea that if he was going back in time, it would take him 6 hours to go forward 60 years, for example, because he was driving. But how would that look in our world line? We would just see a car for a split second, and then it would disappear because it entered a different world line. It's, you know, kind of a weird thing to try and get your head around. But it's interesting nonetheless, and it's sort of like a full package theory of time travel, and that's why I think it's such a fascinating account, is that whoever, you know, let's assume for a moment that it was you know, a fraudulent poster, and if it is, then it was an excellently executed sort of fraudulent sort of account.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really heard of anything like it, and I don't think there will be anything like it. It's just too good, and it kind of makes you, it's sort of like, because nowadays there's this new development where, you know, you get viral advertising for films and things where producers and that will go online and try and promote a film, but they do it via launching all this stuff on YouTube and social networking that inadvertently sparks people's interest in a subject like UFOs. But then what actually happens is it's all just fake, and it's all just a ploy to get you interested in a film. But this was in the year 2000, before any of that stuff. And it's like you said at the start, Peter, nothing's come since that was actually like, oh, the John Titor saga, a new film by...
Yeah.
You know, whoever.
Yeah.
That it nothing happens, and no, most people will never hear of John Titor. In, you know, it's just an obscure little bit of internet history, really.
Yeah,
and I think that's why it's so interesting.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there have been other frauds in the past that may not have involved the internet, but
yeah,
it's not to say that hoaxes haven't been perpetrated.
Yeah,
but it could have been a clever one using the internet, but. Because there wasn't massive publicity, no one wrote a best-selling book from it or anything like that.
No.
You wonder what the point of it was.
Absolutely. And I think perhaps the most interesting element of it for me is the idea that his mission was to obtain this IBM machine, because I know that there is this problem of Unix in the year 2038, and it's kind of being dubbed as the new Y2K. It's like a... It's an issue that will affect Unix-based systems in 2038. And not many people really knew about this in the 90s. I mean, it was known about, but not people outside the industry wouldn't really have known about it. But this was what Titor specifically said his mission was. It was to go back to the 70s to obtain this machine, because they needed it in the year 2038 to decode some mainframe legacy IBM code, which this machine, this IBM 5100 computer, had the ability to do. And somebody basically asked a load of really old, you know, retired IBM engineers in the early 90s, or sorry, the early part of last decade, if there was any validity to that. And a guy did come forward via email and say, not only is that true, but only around 20 people in the world knew about it. Because, and the reason is because IBM at the time didn't want it to be public knowledge, because it would have actually, if anything, it would have prevented the sale of future systems where they decided they didn't want that feature in, because they wanted to kind of prevent people from debugging legacy codes, because they wanted them to use the new code standard. It's like all these things, you know.
Yeah.
They're trying to sort of promote a new standard all the time, and they don't want people trying to revert back to the old way of doing things. So that is very interesting, because what that kind of suggests is that whoever this Tita guy was, he was either legit, and this information was, you know, given to him in some sort of briefing in 2038, or he was one of the, you know, the few people in the world that actually had that insight.
Yeah.
And that certainly narrows the field down quite significantly.
It does.
So when you draw these things together, you start to think, well, you know, there could be some real validity to this story. And I think that's why it keeps resurfacing. You know, the internet kind of goes on, and, you know, years roll by, and the John Tita story will suddenly emerge on some forum because somebody's interested in the subject, and then the whole debate starts again. Mm. And then, you know, somebody's interviewed on a show, and then it all starts again. And I just think it's just going to be a timeless little tale that's never really going to die a death. And it does look now that we are probably in a very different world line to Tita's, because this war that he described never happens. But saying that, perhaps it's just happening, but it's going to be a few years down the road for us. It's not quite in the same timeline as he predicted. But these things may unfold. I mean, he talked about a war between Russia and the US, essentially. And that could still happen. I mean, Russia's still militarily, you know, a threat. You know, there's this idea that Russia now couldn't really stand a chance in a war against the US, but it's not the case. I mean, Russia still has a pretty formidable nuclear stockpile, and, you know, a huge army, and a, you know, good sort of military sort of component. So that could well happen still. He talked about the EU and described the EU kind of folding. That could happen quite easily. You know, there's a lot of sort of anger, certainly in the UK at the moment, about the EU and plans to turn it from a sort of economic zone into a sort of super state, a federalised super state, which seems to be on the cards. So you can sort of see this stuff, you can believe it. But he talks about things like he noticed in this world line that certain books hadn't been published that he had, you know, had seen in his world line and all this sort of thing. So there's obviously these slight differences. But it's a very interesting subject.
So what happens when we get to 2038? Do we meet him? Does he appear? If he's travelling now back?
Yeah, sure. Well, that's an interesting one, because he was apparently born in 1998. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
So he as a human being, as an identity, he says he was born in 2038. And this is where it does get a bit trippy.
So he's born in 1998.
Sorry, in 1998.
Yeah.
So this is where it gets a bit trippy. He was born in 98. Then in 2038, he comes back. Goes back in time.
Yeah. So he's 40 then.
Yeah, 40. When he's in our world line, this is where it gets a little hard to believe. Arguably, he stayed with his own parents in this world line. So he said this on a forum post, because somebody said, well, you know, how the hell would you approach somebody, you know, your parents, and tell them you're a time traveller? And he said, well, it's actually far easier if you're a relative. He said, if you're a relative, they just know that you're flesh and blood, even if you're 40 years older than
they expect. I can believe that. What year was that in then?
Well, this would have been in 2000.
2000, so you would have been 2 years old in their
but
world.
Well, this is the thing. His two-year-old version was in the same house as he was when he came knocking on their door.
Right. Okay.
In this world line.
Yeah.
He knocked on the door, told them that he was their son, but a time traveller from 2038.
Right.
They let him in, they let him stay in the house for 3 months.
Yeah.
But he was sharing the house with himself, but as a two-year-old. But
well,
somebody in our world line, though. So his version in our world line. In our,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's a bit difficult to comprehend, but it somehow seems believable if you accept the multiverse theory of the universe.
Well, I can see that within that context possible,
yeah,
in the timeline sense, but at some point he had to go ahead back to 2038, assuming he went back there.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he hanged around here for 3 months, and then he announced one day that he was going back, and that was it. He disappeared.
So at the moment, he's growing up from 1998.
Yeah.
So that's how many years ago? It's about...
So 15 years ago.
So he's about 15 now. He's still at school in,
yeah,
this world.
In this world, yeah, yeah.
If we take all this as true.
Precisely. Yeah.
While at the same time, if you pardon the expression, he's travelling forward past this moment right now, because he must be passing through this moment right now, even as we speak. And even as you listen to this, if it's before 2038, he's going through this moment ahead back to the future, as they say.
I guess, yeah.
So assume he doesn't stop off again in on the way, which he could well do. Perhaps now or after this, he could,
yeah,
stop off at any point. He would land back in 2038.
Yeah.
And his other self, which has been growing up,
yeah,
through that period, has to be getting into the machine to go back. So he must appear just after that leaves. So that
yeah,
car must go back in time from then. And presumably he then lands just after it leaves. So in the room, he disappears and reappears. He wouldn't want to appear just before he leaves, presumably. He need two parking spaces.
Yeah, right.
So I imagine he would land just after that, in that point.
Sure,
and bring,
yeah,
back, bring,
yeah,
himself back into the same version, effectively.
Well, this is again where it gets a little trippy, because he one of the things he said is that he never ends up in the same version. So he time travels back to 2038... But he knows that his reality will be slightly different to the one he time travelled from.
Right.
The divergence may be like less than 1%.
Right.
It will never be the same.
But is there still then a version of him in that reality who didn't go back in time, if that's not the one he left?
It will be. That would probably be a reality where the divergence was too high, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess that's where it does start getting very confusing. But I'm guessing what he was trying to say was that he would end up in a reality that was pretty much the one he came from.
Well,
so, in other words, somebody called John Tita, if that was his name, it's probably a code name. I think it was a code name. He claimed it just meant time traveller.
Yeah.
He's basically ended up back in a world line where he did time travel out to 1975.
Well, then he may as well be the same timeline. I don't know why it would have to be different.
I think he was just making a point that it wouldn't be the same. It would just be a slightly different world line
version.
Yeah.
And if he's changed the past slightly, it may be that he won't land in the same one.
Yeah.
Because maybe he's altered things a bit and it's going to be different anyway. You know, maybe you can't go back to quite where you came from because it'll set up a paradox of some sort.
Yeah.
You know.
It's interesting. I mean, and yeah, the other sort of very interesting slant on this story that has recently come to light is a lawyer has now come forward, and they've approached the website, the webmaster of johntita.com, and they have claimed that they now represent the parents of John Tita in this world line.
Yeah.
So i.e. the people that he stayed with 10 years ago in 2000, they've now come forward and said, yep, our son did come back and stay with us. He was a time traveller. He announced he was a time traveller.
Right, okay.
But this lawyer doesn't know who they are.
No.
So they're anonymous. They're just emailing him, and I think maybe the odd phone call. But he doesn't know their name. He doesn't know who they are, but he's just representing them. And they apparently are now prepared to reveal some more information, and I don't know the details, but I guess there may be some book in the works or something. I don't know.
So they'll be in their 60s, won't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they would
be,
yeah.
So
that's a very interesting slant. And if that's true, then that probably suggests that our world line is significantly now diverging away from the one that version of Tita came from. Because we now have a scenario where the parents have come forward and said, yes, we had somebody come back to our house and say they were from the future. But that's where it does start to get very confusing.
Well, then if you think about it, if they published a book and say it came out this year, for the sake of argument, that would have been in print all the years after now, right through to 2038.
Yeah, sure.
Blowing the game in this reality.
Completely blowing it.
So he might have to have gone back to a different one where that wasn't already known what he'd done.
Yeah.
But it's still got to be the reality where he needs this piece of equipment. There's no point in going back somewhere else where you can't use it, or it's not going to affect what you want to affect, you know.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the other point to make is Tisa says apparently in forum posts that he was... I don't know if he really said this or not. Unfortunately, it's another example of people saying that they saw a post, but there's no evidence because I can't find the archive, unfortunately. But apparently he said something along the lines of that he believed that he significantly alters our world line. And he wishes he hadn't, because it was almost by mistake that he did it.
Hmm.
And what I think he was referring to was the Y2K millennium bug of 2000. Apparently in his world line, that was a major issue, and that caused quite a lot of sort of damage to infrastructure and real, you know, upheaval, actually, for a long period of time. And there's a theory that basically whoever this time traveller was, they did something in 1975 when they went back there to pick up an IBM business machine that actually triggered some scientist at the time, to some engineer at the time, to go, oh yeah, actually that will be an issue in 25 years time, I'll just do this.
Yeah.
And because at the time they were dealing with the code that would have, you know, that would, you know, compile and create all the standards that we now have.
Yeah.
So it was literally a case of somebody at the time going, yeah, in 2000 there's going to be an issue unless I add this line of code, or, you know, do this.
But it was an issue in our world, though. They did have to change things.
They did have to change things, but it was minor compared to what people were predicting.
Right.
And it didn't. I mean, it kind of came and went. But you see, the thing is, as you say, I mean, I've read stuff where actually there was a huge concerted effort to ensure that nothing major happened, but it was all covered up, the extent of how much of it was done. So there's all sorts of theories about Y2K and what really happened. But Tita's theory...
Well, he could have warned them.
Yeah, and they did something that basically meant that, yeah, sure, things happened.
Well, even
happened.
If they just were aware of it when it came up.
Maybe in his world line they weren't even aware of
it. No, they may just not have thought of it.
But he was surprised that nothing happened, because he was talking in late 2000s. Obviously, the Y2K bug sort of issue had come and gone.
Yeah.
And I think what he possibly realised, that he did something that meant that our world line was entirely different to his world line, but that wasn't his intention. But it was something that he basically, you know, caused as a result of dabbling in 1975 somehow. Because the story that we don't know is what he did in 1975. How did he obtain this business machine? I mean, again, another little snippet of information we have is that he claimed to be related to one of the original engineers at IBM who invented this particular machine in the 70s.
Well, why would he be the one to go back anyway? Presumably he's chosen for the job.
Well, apparently, yeah, because his specialism was the 1970s.
Yeah.
That was his specialism.
Yeah. And so if you went back in time with that laptop computer you've got sitting there,
yeah,
and showed that to someone in 1975, said you're a time traveller, I think they'd believe you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might just say, look, I'm telling the truth, give us one of those computers, and if you want to have a look in the back of this, you might get some ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe at the time some intellectual programmer just accepted it. Just like, yep, that's fine, I accept your time traveller.
And they could have done.
Yeah.
Or they may have just gone along with it in a geeky way.
Yeah.
Like anyone might.
It's but interesting.
Probing his story, like we're interested, they may have gone, humour him a bit. And then suddenly he seems to be quite... Also, he may just have had some money. I mean, why wouldn't they just send him back in time with a load of dollars?
Buy it, yeah.
I mean, that's all he would need, some old currency.
Even just go back and buy it and that's it,
yeah. Do you want the extended guarantee? No, I don't think I'll bother with that, thanks.
But, the The interesting, I mean, the theory is, and this again, this is all just speculation now, because Tito has long gone, and this is all based on his forum posts. But the theory is possibly a deal like that went down, but he then did something else that meant that a scientist at the time became aware of how significant the Y2K bug would be in 25 years' time.
Yes, I'm sure they had a chat in the shop or wherever he went to get it.
And then he went back for unknown reasons to the year 2000, because that is still a mystery here, why he actually dropped in 2000. I mean, I guess one theory is he just wanted to see if the Y2K bug had hit.
Well, that makes sense. He gave the guy a tip and then went ahead and thought, hold on, I'll just see what happened there.
Yeah, and then there's no issue. And then he's probably then spending 3 months pondering on whether or not our world line would see a world war. And then I have seen the forum post where he does say that a war would do us good. He says actually, in their world line, in 2038, the general consensus is that the war was a good thing for humanity and not a bad thing, because it brought people together. And people realised not that the reliance on technology was, you know, not a good thing, and people became a little bit more guarded about technology, and they went back to sort of the community self-sufficient lifestyles, but they backed that up with a little bit of technology, so they still had things like the internet, etc., but they just used it in a very different way.
Mm.
So Tito was saying in 2000 that was a good thing, but I think he kind of implied that he was frustrated because our world line wouldn't have that. We would just, you know, spin off into this reality that we seem to be heading towards now, which is kind of a sort of global sort of trance, really, of being sort of obsessed with technology and sort of here, you know, worshipping it like a deity almost, you know.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting slant again. So all these snippets come out when you study John Tita, you know, it's fascinating stuff. And the other thing to add is he was saying that when he was in our world line, there were instances where he would, like I said earlier, he would encounter things that weren't quite what he was expecting, like a book that wasn't published, or a piece of music that didn't exist, and all this kind of thing. So again, it does sort of suggest to me that he, you know, from the outset, he was probably coming to terms himself with the nature of time travel.
Yeah.
So he himself was on a journey, and some of it he didn't have answers for. You know, and so it's like he couldn't come over on a forum as like the sort of the master of all this stuff, because he wasn't. He was just a soldier doing a mission.
Well, had they used this technology before, come back, they must have invented time travel and done a few test runs, and they could have just come back to see how it worked and not done anything.
Yeah, I think there was a post where he basically said that there were seven other John Tita time travellers,
right?
Or a number like that. So yeah, there were others, and he also suggested that they also went into the future as well.
Yeah.
But one of the things he said about that was it was deemed not particularly worthwhile to go into the future, because I think, and I understand what he's saying, because if you imagine the multiverse theory, then of course going into the future would be kind of pointless. Because all you're doing is going into a reality that's not your reality and seeing what it's like, and then coming back.
Mm.
But then you don't know if your world line will head towards that direction or not.
Right.
So it's sort of like you can't go forward and see who the president is, because when you go back to your world line, you know, your president may not be that president, sort of thing.
Right.
Because it's a different reality as well as a different time. So that's another interesting little slant on it. And I think the other thing was just a purely sort of practical thing, because they really did just stress that the only reason they do it is to, retrieve objects.
Mm.
So going into the future to retrieve an object sounds romantic and really kind of space-agey, sci-fi-y, but in reality, what are you going to do with the objects when you come back? doesn't really serve a purpose.
Well, I don't know. It depends what it is. And if you went forward in time and got yourself a nice laptop from 1970, as long as you could plug it in and charge it up, you probably could do that. You might not be able to get much compatible stuff to go with it, but you could use it, I'm sure. I mean, it's always interesting to see how far back you could take things and still use them, as long as you've got the main supply. But if they were too far divergent, they may not make a lot of sense. But some things would. I mean, if you had a digital camera and brought it back to 1950, you could use it, but you wouldn't be able to download the photographs onto anything. You know, there's some technology you would still have a use for. But other things, you know, it wouldn't go with anything else. It would be a standalone thing. You'd use it, then the batteries would run out and you'd be stuck with it. It wouldn't really...
Well, I guess the point they were making is that they'd be coming back to a different reality, so a different world line. So they'd have this artifact from the future. But what application does that have? Because in their world line, technology may have evolved in a slightly different direction, so that it's sort of like they may use 4 points in a power socket, not 3, or something as crazy and basic as that, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, it does seem hard to believe that there's no application at all to going forward in time. And I'm sure, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, this guy was a soldier, and, you know, maybe his angle on it wasn't actually the valid scientific sort of viewpoint. It was perhaps maybe his opinion.
Yeah, I think if you went forward, the one problem is you're going into maybe, if you assume things get more advanced, you're going to be the primitive landing in a sophisticated society.
Yeah.
And say you came from 1930 to now and you'd land, yeah, there's still pubs and things around, a lot of it you'd understand, but you'd go, blimey, it's so expensive for a pint of beer or whatever. Yet some things would look very normal and other things would be completely odd and you would go, what the hell's that? You know, or the clothes and that, it'd be a bit weird. You might expect some of that. You might go expecting things to be odd, and if you expect things to be a bit odd, you're not going to be too shocked because you wouldn't go forward not expecting it to be different.
Yeah.
But even so, it would be odd to be a kind of 1930s gentleman put into, say, a 2013 street, and then some of it you would be fine with, and then other things would just seem very strange. The sort of things in shops and that, and you know, to some degree, I mean, they were advanced back then, they would understand progress and that, but it would be that phrase, the shock of the new, you know, it would be that slight sense of oddness about it, a disassociation from it, because you wouldn't have a link to it,
yeah.
You know, like an internet cafe or something. You probably would understand it up to a point, but it would be just a few steps removed from your experience. I mean, I think an imaginative person from the 30s could probably land now and get around fairly easily asking a few questions, but someone from 100 years before that might be difficult. And someone from 1830 landing now possibly would be all right, but they would be very hard to understand some things, again, probably a bit too much to understand. I mean, it didn't even have typewriters till the late 19th century, so even a keyboard would be odd. They'd probably work out what it is, because it sort of makes sense. It's got Roman letters on it that they would still have back then. But I think someone from the 30s would understand a laptop computer quite easily, as long as they could switch it on, because it still looks a bit like a typewriter, however much they've changed them around. In fact, in some ways, the ones they have now look more like a typewriter than some of the weird 1970s computers that looked a bit more clunky and bizarre with big screens and stuff. They would look almost weirder than the stuff you get now, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think some of the really sophisticated technology might be easier to understand than some of the intermediate kind of geeky versions, where you might have to struggle with floppy disks and strange green screens and that. They're not kind of science fictionally advanced enough to really pass as futuristic, but they're kind of halfway there. They're hard work to use. And that's the sort of thing John Titor was trying to get hold of in an interesting way. Whereas I think they probably thought back in the 30s that computers, if they had them, would be amazing high definition screens and that, which in fact they are now. So in a way, we've jumped to what the science fiction version was meant to be, in a way. What we've got now, you know, the stuff in between is a little bit more advanced post-Second World War technology. It wasn't that much more than that, you know.
Well, the interesting thing in John Titor's photos is there's a picture of his time machine in one of them, and somebody has since sort of analysed the picture and said, well, there's a little handheld receiver that he's got next to his device, and they've identified that as like a radiation detector, and they said, oh, that looks just like the model that I've got. But that doesn't actually do anything to kind of knock the whole John Titor sort of theory, because the argument is, well, yeah, in our world line, like in his world line, certain technological devices have evolved and progressed to become the same sort of form. So why is it hard to believe that a lot of those radiation detectors are still knocking around in 2038? Yeah. They still do the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a post-war world that Titor came from, and they're probably just grabbing any old bit of equipment they can find. You know, obviously they've got sophistication, they've got the means to build time machines, but at the same time they probably don't have this production line culture that we do now.
No.
So, and certainly not that kind of mass consumption culture. So it seems quite plausible to me that you'd have this futuristic time machine, but it would be sort of thrown together with kind of parts and bits that actually... Yes,
maybe experimental to some degree. Yeah,
and therefore it's not... I don't think it's necessarily... it's like a straw man, sort of. It doesn't really seem like a hard-to-believe pill. So, you know, you can't... It's not like a hard pill to swallow, in my opinion, because you've got like this scenario where... His world line is obviously very, very close to our world line, right down to the point where he understands. He was talking about, the same names of companies like General Motors made the time machine, for example. And it says in the guide that he's printed a copy of, it's built by General Motors, General Electric, even. Mm. So it's like the same sort of US conglomerate companies are involved in the production of things as they would be in our world line.
Yeah.
So. You know, the kind of parallels become, you know, sort of become quite interesting, I think, with this stuff. But yeah, it's a very interesting subject, and I just think it, for me, it's, time travel is a fascinating subject, full stop, really, but I find myself continuously captivated by the whole John Titor story, and I just personally like the idea of that being the way the universe works, and there's so much sort of sci-fi and different films, different slants on how time travel works. I mean, there's a recent film that came out this year, 2012, called Looper, and that has a very interesting time travel slant. But I just think the Titor one is pretty spot on in terms of what I like to think time travel is.
Mm.
And I think it will continue to be a fascinating subject.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.